Welcome to Learning Through Grace podcast. Just three guys with their Bibles learning through grace. I'm Derek.
I'm Tyler.
I'm Alan.
On today's episode, we're going to talk about probably our most requested topic so far, and one that I have postponed because it's a big topic and it can be a tough one to talk about. And we're going to talk about why do bad things happen to good people. I want to start with a little bit of warning for our listeners. We're probably going to talk about some heavy stuff, some heavy topics in this conversation. And if you're not in the right place right now to listen to that, go ahead and skip today's episode. Come back, listen to it later when you're in a better spot, or don't. Just come back to us in 2 weeks when we move on to a new topic. We totally understand that some of the topics we talk about may be tough to listen to and you may not be in the right place for it, but we do think it's an important topic and one we've been asked specifically to talk about. So we're going to dive in. So I guess I'll just start with kind of the giant question of why do bad things happen to good people?
Tyler, go and open us up.
I mean,
so I put that out there almost as a joke because it's a big topic.
It's such a, like, and it's so controversial. Mm-hmm. I mean, because you look, when people that are not Christians, the one thing that they latch onto is this, is if God is such a good God, why does he allow bad things to happen to good people? But I think you can also turn that around and say, why do good things happen to bad people? You know, I mean, you can flip it around and say the same thing. And who are we to judge who's a bad person, who's a good person? But I mean, if you want to look at a scripture example right off the bat, I mean, you can, and we can argue if this book was real or if it's a
parable.
But if you look at Job, I mean, in the book of Job, Job was a good person. In Job 1:1. It says Job was good, and the whole book is about him suffering through the whole thing. Even in the book of Job, and Derek, I know that it's one of your favorite books, if not your favorite book of the Bible. And that whole thing, I mean, he loses everything. He loses his house. He loses his family. He loses his kids. I mean, everything he loses and is suffering. And he never gives up. And still, at the end of it, is praising God at the end of it, which, good for him. I'm glad he could. I don't think I could at that point. So that's just one example that I have, and I'm sure we'll get into more as this goes on. That's just one example if you're looking for in the Bible of why does things happen, or maybe that's just a story. It's not really why things happen. It's just an example of it happening in the Bible.
For me, when I think of this topic or I talk about this topic, I try to remember, what was God's original intent for our lives? When you go back to Genesis and you look at creation, we were supposed to live with him in the Garden of Eden forever. We were supposed to have that direct communication with him. We were supposed to be with the animals. We were supposed to eat the fruit that he had made for us. Life was supposed to be perfect. But then when sin enters the world, God's plan is altered. It is completely changed. This world is not what he created. He created it to be perfect. But when sin entered the world, so did death, and so did bad things. God did not create those bad things. They are a symptom of the problem, and the problem is sin. God does not create bad things. Everything that he has created is good. I see you're wanting to lift off, so I'll stop talking and you can lift off.
So that's definitely one answer I've seen given, and it's one I struggle with a long time because in your answer there, and feel free to stop me if maybe I'm misunderstanding, but it's the way I've understood it for a long time, is sin enters the world, bad things start happening. Totally get that. I can see that Cain and Abel is a direct representation of the sin that entered the world. First murder, first crime, I mean, if you want to put it that way. And I think that answers when you're talking about why do bad things happen to good people. Yeah, sure, there's a lot you can attribute. If you get mugged, you get raped, you get whatever. Like, there's a lot of things we can say that's sin that has turned things evil, right? But that doesn't, at least for me, and hasn't, justified, you know, cancer or tornadoes. We live in the middle of Tennessee. Tornadoes are a common theme. That's nature. That's God's domain. I don't see Satan like commanding a tornado to pop up necessarily. So there's a lot of non, I guess, more nature-based things that, to me, I struggle to say, okay, that's a symptom of sin, because why did my grandmother, as an example, who is a great woman, suddenly get cancer? Like, what was the purpose there? Like, what was God's greater plan to make her last years on earth suffering? And that's an example for me. That's not a real one, but I know there's a lot of people that can relate to that. And when we talk about this question, that's when this question comes up, right? People aren't asking this question a lot of times when things are great. Most of the time when you hear this question, it's someone that is lamenting in pain because something's happening. A loved one's going through a terrible time. Something terrible's happened in their community. Could be a school shooting. Could be a terrorist attack. Could be natural disaster. It doesn't matter what it is. But that's the times when you hear that crying out, that why would God let bad things happen to good people? And I don't disagree that sin entering the world is a big thing. I think we look at it sometimes, in my opinion, the reverse is what the real catalyst was. Yes, sin entered the world. To me, that's not what made everything different. To me, it was God leaving. Sin entered, which we understand is part of the reason God left and goes to heaven and, you know, creates this barrier. But before sin, before Adam and Eve eat the fruit, Garden of Eden is perfect. To the point that, like, I don't think we think about sometimes. And we all know that, like, after they eat the fruit, they realize they're naked. And, like, that's a big shame moment. They're like, oh, it's so shameful. These people have been walking around in paradise for all this time. There's different scholars can tell you different amount of years. But they never once needed to wear clothes. That means they never had to worry about, like, a bad sunburn like we do when we go to the beach. They didn't have to worry about frostbitten toes when it got cold. Like, they didn't have any of those issues because God was there and everything was in such perfect balance that they didn't have to worry about it. And I think we see that if you look at the Bible. I think the Bible tells an interesting story without telling it at times. It's not really the forefront. It's not really being focused on, but you can see it when you kind of look in the background like this. They went from not needing clothes to needing clothes. It doesn't rain until Noah. The ecosystem is, as we understand it in 2024, it has to rain. If it doesn't rain, our ecosystem is going to fall apart and a lot of bad things are going to happen. But it was in such perfect unity when God was here that it didn't need to rain. The first illness that I can find mention of isn't until Noah. So we're talking hundreds of years. I mean, civilizations grown to the point that we have giant civilizations such as Egypt that are growing up and having all these things go on. And that's the first recording that I could find. I hand up, may have missed something. But that's the first recording I can see where illness of any kind is even mentioned. And then we can read, I mean, you read the early books and you read how old people were compared to now. And the age just keeps dropping and dropping. I mean, Abraham was in his hundreds having children and doing all these things and having kids that were going on to have kids when they were 200 years old. And like, we don't even live to be 200, much less are we waiting till we're 200 to have kids. Like, that's a whole nother conversation. So to me, it's less about sin entering and more about God leaving. We were in such perfect unity and then God left and the earth is just reacting. Our bodies are reacting to the absence of our creator, the absence of the thing that was giving us life. And it's a slow progress. I mean, we see it takes hundreds of years to get to where we are now. But for me, at least, that's been something that's helped me think through, like, the cancer and stuff. Like, where does that come from? Why does God allow that? Well, God didn't when he was here. We, as a species, chose sin. And we can put all the blame on Adam and Eve, but Adam and Eve were us. I don't believe in, like, reincarnation, but I think any human put in that situation most likely falls the same thing. I think that's what the Bible pretty much tells us at different points. And so it's less about sin entering and it being a result of sin, because then that can be a little bit like, well, if I lived better, I wouldn't have gotten cancer. And that's where I feel dangerous time saying it's because sin entered, because then it gets back to this, what if I had done better? Would I have gotten this type of thing? Whereas if you look at it from the lens of God left and the earth is just slowly decaying because of that, that's where this is coming from.
Right. And I understand what you're saying. you know, Paul tells us that the wages of sin is death. And so kind of what you're saying is God leaves, and I don't really know if God leaves, God kicks the sin out, because mm-hmm. God cannot exist in the same spot as sin, because God is perfect and sin is obviously imperfect. So I don't think God leaves. I think God kicks out the sin and we are the sin. So until our sin is covered up fully by Jesus, then, you know, we can't get that full connection back that we're going to have one day in heaven when ultimately sin is destroyed and all those things. But I understand what you're saying, but we have to keep in mind that this is not what he created. And kind of what you were saying was, if I live a good life, am I going to be immune to bad times? It's like, well, if you look at Jesus was God, and he still had bad times on earth. Lazarus, his good friend, still died. He knows he's going to resurrect him, but he still cries. He still weeps. He's still a human being in that moment. He's fully God. But he's going through the same emotions that we have. And I'm sure, you know, Mary and Martha come to him, and they're having this moment. And they're like, if you would have just been here just a couple more days earlier, Lazarus would not be dead. And Jesus cries about that, knowing he's about to go to the tomb and resurrect him. These times, because this is the earth, this is not fully what God created, these times are going to happen to everybody. Jesus in Gethsemane doesn't want to die himself, or at least not in that way. Says, God, if there's another way, let this cup pass from me. Jesus is not immune to bad things happening to good people. And that doesn't make me feel good. I don't really think a good answer to this question, but we have to remind ourselves that this is not it. This is not heaven. We can create little pockets of heaven on this earth when we surround ourselves with other Christians and we're trying to live the godly life, but bad things are going to happen to us. When Peter is hanging upside down on that cross, after him living a good life, that is a bad thing happening to a good person. And Paul reminds us that the wages of sin is death. And unfortunately, on this earth, we're going to get sick and we're going to die. However, when you die, you're resurrected into a new body and you get to fully live with Jesus forever. So we're going to have a tough time down here for however long the Lord allows us to be down here, but there's something more coming. There's something better coming, because he's already defeated the problems of this earth. He's already defeated sin. We just have to wait until it's our time to be reunited with him in heaven.
One thing that stuck out to me in Luke 18 and verse 19, it says, Jesus said to him, "Why do you call me good? No one is good except God." So God is the only one, you know, that is good. And so everybody on this earth in his eyes is bad, you know, because he's the only perfect one. And maybe I said that a little bit wrong, but God is the only one that is good. And so we all sin. None of us on this earth, none of you listening, none of us sitting around this table, none of us are perfect. And we all sin.
Another way to ask that question based off that is, why do bad things happen to people? Because like you said, we're all flawed. We all have issues. So just that in itself, I think, reframes the question of, because when you say, why do bad things happen to good people, you're almost saying, I'm too good for God to do this to me.
Absolutely.
Or to do it to them, or what, like, you're almost casting judgment in an indirect way when you say that. And that verse basically says the exact opposite.
And you know, I just thought of this when you said that a preacher in Murfreesboro was just diagnosed with cancer not long ago. It might have been 2 years ago. And they released a statement to their church, and they also released it to the internet. And one of the things he said was, now I get to know how to minister some of you better, because now I'm going through this as well. And I thought, man, what a cool way to think, because he could have really gotten into this.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, man, I'm preaching for you every Sunday. I've given up tons of money, that I could have done something else, but I chose to be your servant and your preacher, and now I've got cancer. Why? But that was not his reaction. His reaction was, how am I going to use this storm to help other people? The storm that I'm in, this cancer that I'm in, how can I use it to God's glory? And I think that's kind of where we need to anchor ourselves, because everybody's going to get into bad problems. Everyone's going to have bad times. But how can we anchor ourselves back into the truths that we know about God and the goodness of God that we know is coming? How do we hold on to that? Because bad things are going to happen to us.
Yeah, I think that's where I wanted to kind of head, because like we said at the beginning, this question gets asked when bad things are happening. And we can sit here and talk about like our reasons for why does God allow it? Why does God do it? Like, we, all of those different things, we can have that conversation. But the problem that I think is, none of that matters when the person's asking it. If I'm going through a situation where I'm asking that, you sitting down trying to have a theological conversation with me about like the history of illness and the, like, I'm gonna be like, look, dude, my child just died in a car wreck. Like, I don't, that, no. Like, how do you react to that is, I think, the bigger question as a Christian.
You need to show them love. I mean, I think that's where it all boils down to, is you've got to, when the person is asking this question and if you are ever fortunate enough to be the person that they're asking this question to, is you have to show them love. I don't think when they are asking, just like Derek said, when they are asking this question, you can't have that theological debate. You just have to show them love. You have to show that you care about that person and that you are there for them. And God shows us love. I mean, Jesus died for us. He knew we were sinners. You know, he knew we were going to sin, but he sent his son to die for us. And we have to be there, and we have to be there for that person that is asking us that question. We just have to show them love in every aspect, in every way.
Because at that point, your soil is not receptive just yet. The soil, if we're referring to the parable that Jesus talks about, the different soils of your willingness to accept God, essentially, in those times, your soil is just probably not ready to be reunited with God. Kind of since you brought up Job, you know, for several days, your friends, did you already say that?
No.
Oh, good.
Yeah. He brought up Job.
I did.
Yeah, I know that, but I thought, oh, was I not listening fully? And he already talked about this.
You are, and I also just pulled up the same verse I think you're about to mention.
But I'm glad you brought up Job, because in the very beginning of Job, when Job's going through the storm, when bad things are happening to a good person, here comes his three friends, and for a while, now, they eventually open their mouths, and there's dozens of chapters on the discourse between Job and his friends.
Right.
But for a while, they just sit together and they're just having that relationship where I know Job, I can see the boils. I know you're going through a bad time, but I'm going to just be here for you. And that's what we have to be willing to do for our friends.
You nailed it. I mean, I was literally pulling it up, but they just sit and they're just there and they don't try to answer his issues at first. They don't try to tell him, oh, it's going to be okay. They don't try to tell him, oh, it's not a big deal, we'll replant or whatever. Like, they don't try to ignore it, but they also don't try to explain it. Like, they just say, hey, we're here. Whatever you need, we're here. They eventually do. I mean, like you said, there's many, many chapters of their conversation that do happen once Job is kind of in a little more willing place to have that conversation. And one of them, and I think it's in chapter 5, literally just says, like, if I were you, I would talk to God. Like, pray and cry out to God. He's the God that can do everything. He's the God that makes the sun come up. He lists off just a ton of virtues of God. He's like, look, you can sit here and talk to us all day. We can't do anything. Like, we can be here for you and we're going to help you, but go to the big man. Go to God first. Like, he's the one that can actually move mountains. He's the one that can change everything. So go to him in petition. Pray to him. Cry out to him. And they just really kind of give him that direction very early on in the text.
Yeah, another thing we have to try to think of, and it's hard when you're in that storm of where something bad is going on, but and you're thinking, God, why can't you help me? You're all powerful. Why can't you pull me out of whatever is happening? And this would be hard, but I hope that Alan would do this in the battle he would be going through with whatever was going on, but Isaiah 55 talks about, your thoughts are higher than my thoughts and your ways are better than my ways. God has an ultimate better plan. We can't see it yet. He may be using this situation to work on me to where I'm relying on him more and my relationship with God is better. I don't know because I'm not God. I don't get to see inside of his brain. He unfortunately has to look inside my brain all the time. We have to remember that he's got a better idea for us, or he's got a different idea for our life. And sometimes things happen and it is not according to the plan. I heard a quote one time of somebody seeing God paint on a big canvas, and God already finished the picture in the corner, and you focused really heavily on that, and you're asking questions about that, but you've already, you don't even see what he's doing in the other corner of the canvas. We don't get to know everything that God is doing, and we don't get to see inside of his mind, but we have to put our ultimate trust in him and rejoice in the fact that if Alan dies in a car crash, I get to go to heaven, and the ultimate problem has already been solved. He has already defeated death, and we get to go to heaven. That isn't always an easy thing to remember when you're going through something really bad on earth.
Yeah, that's where like the logic versus emotion comes in. Because like logically, we can sit here and say, yeah, Isaiah says it perfectly. For like sure. His heights are higher than our thoughts. But when you're sitting there with your loved one who's dying, or you're watching the news, like, our emotions take over, which overcome logic. I think all of us can say we've been in emotional moments where there was no logic that was going to get through to us in that moment until we had time to like come to grips with what was happening. Whether it's good, bad, doesn't matter. But we had to come to grips with what was happening, look at it kind of in hindsight almost, and like as a step away before we could really logically start looking at it. Thank you for listening to Learning Through Grace podcast and joining in our conversation today. If you like what you hear, you can find us wherever you find your podcast every other Monday, and you can also follow us on Instagram.